This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
U.S. officials say there's growing evidence Pakistan's ISI spy agency encouraged a Pakistani militant group, the Haqqani Network, to carry out last week's attack on the U.S. Embassy and NATO headquarters in Kabul. A U.S. Senate committee voted this week to make $1 billion in U.S. aid to flood-ravaged Pakistan, conditional on a crackdown on militant groups. Former Afghan President Burhanuddin Rabbani was killed Tuesday in a suicide bombing. A survivor of the attack, an aide to the former president, said Rabbani was lured to his death by the bomber, who claimed he was representing a mysterious figure mediating between the government and the Taliban's senior leadership. NATO leaders Wednesday authorized a 90-day extension of the alliance's mission in Libya. NATO began enforcement of a four-month no-fly zone over Libya in March. NATO fighter jets have flown more than 20,000 sorties over Libya, dropping thousands of bombs to take out Muammar Gaddafi's command centers and military materiel. Hundreds of civilians have been reported killed. Amnesty International says it has uncovered evidence that rebel forces in Libya have committed gross human rights abuses, some amounting to war crimes. The rights group also reveals the Western media deliberately ignored or covered up the widespread atrocities. In a report released Tuesday, Amnesty accuses the rebels of unlawful killings, arbitrary arrests, and widespread torture of civilians, mostly black foreigners. The report also confirms widely held concerns about the NTC's ability to unite the country and oversee a peaceful transition. Many attacks are focused on blacks suspected of being sympathetic to ousted dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The report states angry groups of supporters of the February 17th revolution shot, hanged, and lynched dozens of captured soldiers and suspected foreign mercenaries, and did so with total impunity. Gaddafi's supporters have accused NATO of killing up to 800 civilians. Amnesty says both the NTC and Gaddafi's forces are to blame. U.S. combat troops in Iraq may be heading to the exits, but the U.S. government's enormously expensive intervention there is hardly coming to an end. U.S. officials are planning to expand the gargantuan embassy in Baghdad, a heavily fortified, self-contained compound the size of Vatican City, by far the largest embassy the world has ever seen. Inside its high walls, guard towers and machine gun emplacements ring not just the embassy itself, but more than 20 other buildings. The number of personnel under the authority of the U.S. ambassador will swell from 8,000 to about 16,000.
More details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
You are listening to the Rule of Law Radio Network at ruleoflawradio.com. Live free speech talk radio at its best.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia, and welcome back to the second hour of our now 2 hour long show, and welcome again to all our listeners in the US on the Logos Radio Network and other FM stations. I hope that we can provide some interesting insights for you from the other side of the globe. And today I want to focus in this section of the show on a rather astonishing article that appeared in a major Australian newspaper, and we're really talking about here a very popular broadsheet newspaper, the Sydney Morning Herald, which is seen by millions of people around the country. Now, the title of the article, which is on the front page right up at the top, is "Philosophers' Claim Over Moral Rights to Kill Newborns Sparks Outrage." Killing newborns is morally the same as abortion and should be permissible if the mother wishes it, Australian philosophers have argued in an article that has unleashed a firestorm of criticism and forced the British Medical Journal to defend its publication. Alberto Giubbolini from Monash University and Francesca Minerva from the University of Melbourne say a fetus and a newborn are equivalent in their lack of a sense of their own life and aspiration. They contend this justifies what they call afterbirth abortion, as long as it is painless, because the baby is not harmed by missing out on a life it cannot conceptualize. Now, of course, Australia has had legalized abortion for several decades, and that is somewhat a controversial position. There are many people, Christians and sort of traditional sort of right-wing type people are against it. Traditionally left-wing people, liberal-minded views, as opposed to libertarian, I guess we need to distinguish there a little, is these types of people tend to be strongly opposed to abortion. And of course, the argument used by the left is that it is the mother's choice and that we need to give women the choice, that it is her body. But then, of course, these debates occur about when is the child really an independent living entity as opposed to being merely a part of the mother. And there are a lot of arguments there that have been proposed. And you can look at photographs of fetuses at a very early age and, gee, they look so well-formed, you'd think they look like people. But the current, I believe, the laws that we currently have do allow for legal abortions up to 4 or 5 months. Typically, 3 months is the limit. Beyond about 5 months, I think it does become illegal. Of course, there are exceptions to that, I think, when the mother's life is at risk. And obviously, there are medical situations where the situation medically could be so serious that both the mother and child may die if the child isn't aborted, in which case, you know, you could certainly make an argument from medical ethics that in that case, it may be necessary to, well, one of them is going to have to be sacrificed, and then you have to make a decision, you know, does the mother die, or does the mother and the baby die, or do we just let the baby die and at least we'll know the mother can live? But there are a lot of legitimate, tough medical ethics questions, I think, in this whole spectrum of discussion. And of course, the question of when does the unique person really come into existence? What is the unique person? Do we have a divine soul, or are we merely a mechanical thing? And depending on your view about a lot of those issues, your view about abortion can be radically different. So I invited a number of listeners to this show and Facebook Truth News Australia members to come on to talk about this article in particular, which now takes the abortion debate to a new level where we're really talking about killing children. So we're talking about, you know, a baby is born and, well, we think maybe we can't take care of it properly or we just didn't want it, so we kill it. And these philosophers, so-called, have said, well, that is perfectly logical and in a continuum with the decision about abortion, because quite often the decision about whether a woman will have abortion is just a personal preference. No, I don't feel like having a baby right now, so I'll kill it. So why should that be any different to, say, killing an actual baby that's been born? Well, the only difference can be your argument that you use to define when the organism becomes a human, and therefore killing it rather than just being, say, you know, terminating some sort of life form becomes actually murder. Because we have to move from definitions of words, we have to change our language. When we kill people, it's called murder. So I've got on the show now to bring her perspective on this question, Helen, who's been thinking about this and had a look at the articles. Helen, welcome to Truth News Australia.
Hi.
Great to have you on the show. Now, you are a mother and you've had a look at these issues. You've got children yourself. I'll just give you the floor to give me your perspective on this and your reaction to this article, which has, you know, been obviously pushed to the very front of awareness in the media in Australia.
Yeah, well, I think it's rocked a lot of people. I want to say, look, I am a mother, but I also want to say that when I was quite young, I actually had an abortion myself, and when I ended up having children on my, you know, that I didn't abort, I had to, you know, I did look at that, at what I did, and I sort of must say that for myself, I sort of regretted what I did. And that's coming from a perspective of, you know, I had not had a child before and I was only young. And there's no excuse for it. But I was told, you know, it was just a blop and, you know, all sorts of things. But when
sure.
I actually had my own children, my perspective changed. So I sort of wanted to at least say that I've been there and done that. So back to this article. I have been thinking about it because I've been thinking about the mindset of these two philosophers or philosophy lecturers or whatever they are.
Sure.
And how they came to this so-called logical conclusion. I'm wondering how their brain works, you know, because we are not reptiles. I know that reptiles have the part in their brain that deals with empathy and compassion.
Yes.
Well, that's how reptiles think. And, you know, we're living in a society that is growingly becoming more aware. And a lot of people are trying to, you know, we're looking at the earth and all sorts of issues and trying to open up this area of compassion and empathy and trying to be a bit more understanding. So I don't know whether they put a whole lot of information into a computer and came up with some logical explanation that way, where there was no humanity involved in it whatsoever.
I'll just give you the argument. I'll just give you the argument that was used by the editor of the journal to justify it. He says that the goal in the article and in the journal itself is not to present the truth or promote a moral view. It is to present a well reasoned article, and it is said here in the Sydney Morning Herald piece that what is disturbing is not the arguments in the paper, nor its publication in an ethics journal. It is the hostile, abusive, and threatening responses that it has elicited. And it says here that proper academic discussion and freedom are under threat.
I suppose they're talking about freedom of speech. But if we have freedom of speech, then we have to have freedom of speech of response as well. And it's pretty well known that children in the fetus are able to hear sounds apart from the mother's heartbeat. They respond to music, and they can also remember music when they come out of the wound. They recognise it. Psychologists have done studies on this sort of thing.
Right.
I doubt very much that this would ever be allowed to happen, and I think that in a way possibly it's been a good thing because it's we can see people's reactions and they're pretty much in an uproar about it. It is murder. It is murdering, especially once a child's been born, because if they're saying that they're not capable of thinking or doing anything like that, does that mean that we also murder people that have been in terrible accidents and have had brain injuries?
Well, this is a really important point you've raised. And, of course, killing a baby is, by definition, murder. There's certainly, by the definition of our current laws, there's no doubt about it. And murder is a legal term. So, really, there's no debate that killing a baby would be murder. But we have, and some of this has been presented on Facebook, and I have to say I'm not an expert in this area, but we've had some other contributions from readers on our Facebook page who've said that the philosophy that would allow this has actually been promoted by people such as Peter Singer, who is a major advocate for animal rights, and that there is actually a type of justification for it from certain types of somewhat unusual anarchistic type philosophers who basically say that the human being is not to be put on a pedestal above, for example, animals. But this also, to my mind, has some connection to those who those who are often called eco-terrorists, who are basically saying that humanity itself is a blight on the earth, and that human beings should actually be killed because there are too many of us, and that we need to reduce the human population to protect Gaia, this concept of the Mother Earth. And while I accept that what you've said, Helen, that there is a reaction to this, which is good, in that, you know, we probably won't see this in the short term becoming law or changing our legal structure, that this larger movement and emphasis of the eco-fascism and somewhat, you know, demonizing humanity seems to connect with this to me in some way. And it also connects with the philosophies of eugenics. But over to you.
Yeah, well, the way that they've been, in that case, it's a little bit too simplistic. You know, there's no doubt that, you know, we've not come that far, I don't think, as humans. You know, we're not...
Yes, Helen, we're just going to break, and we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes.
Corn and Bullion is a family-owned and operated business that has helped many families and friends in protecting their assets, and we would like to do the same for you. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer Patriot safes, ammunition, Berkey water products, gift certificates, wristbands, and our new silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and the Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 5. Visit us at CapitalCoinAndBullion.com or call 512-646-6440.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Miras Proven Method. Michael Miras has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Miras Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Miras banner, or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com, or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to Truth News, and today we are talking about killing newborns. It's the new philosophic fashion by Australian academics, posting in a major British medical journal, in fact, the British Medical Journal, as it's called. Incidentally, the journal is also the journal that published the scathing character attacks against Andrew Wakefield, the famous doctor who exposed problems with the MMR vaccine. This is the same journal that published the writings of Brian Deer, who is not even a medical doctor, merely a journalist, which actually the subject of a civil lawsuit by Dr. Wakefield. And I think that's also not too surprising, considering what we're now seeing coming out of this journal. I'm very concerned about the complete abandonment of ethics from a journal which is concerned with ethics. Because, I mean, let me just make it clear, this is an abomination, what has been written. And the fact that they were using Australians to write it is a sad indictment on our country. But this question of the philosophical underpinnings of the idea that it might be okay to kill newborns is one which I do want to explore in more depth. But I just want to go back to our guest, Helen, because, I mean, you're coming at this from a more kind of basic kind of emotional position on it. And I think that's also very important. And as you mentioned earlier, you did have an abortion when you were younger and you regretted it greatly. But can we actually just talk for a minute about the logical argument that is presented in the article? Because I'd like to know what your position is on abortion, and particularly that question of when does an embryo become a person?
Well, to me, when I actually, had children and wanted to, was pregnant, and to me it became a person, as soon as it was conceived. I was so looking forward to having my children. I named them all before they were born, and had a, and myself, my husband and I had our own relationship with them. And as we said, we named them, and, it was, as I said.
So from your point of view, there really is no legitimate form of abortion or termination, as they like to call it, that you would endorse. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if I'm not talking about endorsing. You mentioned before if the mother and child's lives were at risk.
What about that? Just as a scenario. I mean, what do you think about that situation?
Well, I think, in cases like that, I think that possibly, the person would have to look at those things. And, they've got to live with it too. You've got to live with it.
Yeah.
You've got to look deep inside yourself and decide whether you're going to be able to live with that or not.
Right.
So for me, I can't be there telling another woman, it's their decision whether or not to do it. All I can say is that, in retrospect, I believe that, a fetus is a fetus, and, I don't think, as you said before, when we've seen pictures of them, they certainly do develop all these things. I think that they possibly should be aware that, you are stopping a life, and it's up to them whether they can live with that. We can't, as you said, it's legalised now and so forth. But, this saying it's okay to do this when children are born is just absolutely ridiculous, especially what you were just saying about it printed in a medical journal. We do have the Hippocratic Oath, and I was just looking here at the Declaration of Professional Responsibility, Medicine's Social Contract with Humanity. And this is from the House of Delegates of the American Medical Association, which I just looked up. The very first thing that they say in their declaration is to respect human life and the dignity of every individual. Now, that goes against what they're talking about, goes against that, in my opinion.
It certainly does. And, of course, there is also the Hippocratic Oath, which every doctor must take, and I don't know if you have the text of that, but I understand that is actually an oath which is taken, which is considered quite important in the medical profession.
Oh, I certainly have. I actually lost a child 10 years ago through medical negligence, and so I'm very familiar with the Hippocratic Oath.
I mean, first of all, do no harm, I think, is as it's often translated. You, as a doctor,
right.
you may not harm your child. I mean, sorry, sorry.
Your patient.
Your patient, yes,
yep.
Indeed.
Can I read the other points in the declaration?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Quickly. Number two, refrain from supporting or committing crimes against humanity and condemn all such acts. Three, treat the sick and injured with competence and compassion and without prejudice. Four, apply our knowledge and skills when needed, that by doing so may put us at risk. Five, protect the privacy and confidentiality of those for whom we care and breach that confidence only when keeping it would be seriously threaten the health and safety of that or others. Six, work freely with colleagues to discover, develop and promote advances in medicine and public health that alleviate suffering and contribute to human well-being. Seven, educate the public and polity about present and future threats to the health of humanity. Eight, advocate for social, economic, educational and political changes that ameliorate suffering and contribute to human well-being. And the last one, teach and mentor those who follow us, for they are the future of our caring profession. We make these promises solemnly, freely, and upon our personal and professional honour. That's it.
Yes, and you know, you sort of have to wonder in how many ways have those principles been violated already by our governments and by large corporations. And you know, the nice window dressing of this language is really just framing our society, and it doesn't really go into practice except when they want to apply it. And unfortunately, it is quite often applied quite cruelly and, you know, exactingly in some situations, and in others not at all.
Yeah, well, believe me, I've experienced it. I've experienced it with the medical profession. But, you know, I always thought that if you became a doctor that you did it to because you really wanted to help people. But as I mentioned before, because, you know, you do have to wonder sometimes how people think the way that they do. And, you know, in my own sort of way of wanting to understand that, I've read a little bit about it, and this is what I was talking about to you before about the reptilian brain. What happens, apparently, is that when we don't use the part of our brain that deals with compassion and empathy, and they're apparently in the front of our brain up there, we lose touch with actually thinking with compassion and empathy. And, you know, that is the problem when we have brains that are working that way. I think another way that we can put that is, I think we refer to them sometimes as sociopaths.
It's certainly...
People who are unable to feel any empathy or compassion.
It certainly would seem that way. And, I mean, But there is also this philosophical, I guess, aspect of it, which you may well call it a sociopathic philosophy. But I just want to quote here from some text that was posted on Facebook, and I believe this is quoted from an article. The debate is not just medical; it plays out in the redefinition of the human person. The Western world, considering that the Judeo-Christian culture could not be the norm anymore, given the multiple convictions ranging from atheism to all sorts of different positions, has decided to renounce the two pillars defining heretofore the human person, i.e. that each human being is the image of God on the one hand, and thus sacred regardless of race, convictions, origins, and social status, and having a soul which resists to death on the other hand. A number of American philosophers, lawyers, and doctors have pondered over this problem, which constitutes the redefinition of the human being, putting aside these two dogmatic points, soul and image of God. Here is what they arrived at. Man is man when he is autonomous on the one hand and conscious on the other hand. They have thus substituted the notion of autonomy to that of image of God, and the notion of consciousness to that of immortality of soul. Thus is considered a non-person any newborn infant or any handicapped person or any other human being assisted in one way or the other, and any individual not integrated, not desired, and not loved. Sorry, we've got to end it now. Thank you very much for coming on, Helen.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll be back after the break.
Bye now.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Could printed books soon be a thing of the past? Apparently, a lot of kids these days are exchanging book pages for web pages. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to tell you what's happening to literacy.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Forget books and magazines. A recent study by the UK's National Literacy Trust found that text messages are the number one reading material for kids today, and numbers 2 and 3 are email and Facebook. That's not surprising, since cell phones and computers outnumber novels in most homes. We adults are obviously not setting a very good example. Of course, text messages are not known for their literary quality or for their outstanding spelling and grammar. In fact, they're some of the worst writing around. So if you want your kids to develop basic English skills, tell them to unplug from Facebook and turn off Twitter, then hand them an old-fashioned book. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. Today we are dealing with the question of the philosophical justifications for killing small children. And this, though it sounds ridiculous and it sounds almost satirical and it's somewhat nightmarish, this idea was actually put forth by two philosophers who are writers for the A Journal of Medical Bioethics, which is part of the British Medical Journal, a very prestigious publication. But one which, as I noted in the previous segment, engaged in some rather scurrilous activities in relation to Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And it does indicate to me that this journal has some political leanings, which may be somewhat in the background to allow certain types of topics to come to the fore. But I also have to consider how interesting it is that this story made it to the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald, because it is not typically the sort of story that you'd see on the front page of one of the biggest newspapers in the country. I mean, odd things are written all the time. People do bizarre things. Like abortion doctors are threatened. People write crazy tracts of all kinds. They don't tend to make it onto the front page of the news. So again, when we see that, and we always know that the mainstream media is in a sense massaging public opinion rather than just reporting on it. So the fact that it's been in the mainstream media with such coverage indicates to me again that this is actually something that is being deliberately injected into our public discourse. And I've also had a chance now to read the article in full. And I just want to point out that those who have said that this article is merely a thought experiment, in fact, that was the justification of the editor of the journal, or that this article may have been written with the subtle aim of actually undermining the ridiculous propositions that are made in it by presenting them in such a bald-faced way, I think you're completely wrong, and I think you're misunderstanding it, and I think you're underestimating the seriousness of what we're dealing with in terms of the people who've written this article. And what leads me to really be quite certain about that is that the philosophical ideas that are embodied in this article are almost an exact mirroring of the writings of Peter Singer. And Peter Singer is a very influential bioethicist and well-known, very world-famous, and has been regarded as being one of the most influential philosophers alive today. And I want to just quickly read a quote here from Peter Singer, in which he says that during an interview, Singer was asked, "Is there anything wrong with a society in which children are bred for spare parts on a massive scale?" His answer, no. "Given a choice between keeping an adult chimpanzee and a human infant, the chimp should beat out the child." In another interview, a woman asked him, "Would you kill a disabled boy?" "Yes, if that was in the best interests of the baby and of the family as a whole." And here is the killer quote. "Human beings are not born self-aware or capable of grasping their lives over time. They are not persons." He's referring there to babies. "They are not persons. Hence, their lives would seem to be no more worthy of protection than the life of a fetus." Now, this point of view is reflected exactly in the article by Alberto Gibulini and Francesco Minerva from University of Melbourne, in which they actually say, and I can't quite find it here, it's a bit complicated to scroll through all these articles, but they actually make a quote which is almost identical to what you just heard there. So I'm quite convinced now that this is a serious philosophical position which is being openly advocated by a major British medical journal and now is being put forward on the table for public consumption. And in doing so, this will acclimatize the reading public, the general public, to think that this is actually a normal subject for discussion. Now, I have two more guests to bring in to the discussion, and this has been in response to the Facebook post that was made a couple of days ago. And I have Carolyn from Wagga Wagga. Carolyn, welcome. I hope you're surviving the floods down there. I know it's pretty extreme.
Yeah, we are on flood watch, and we're right at the moment. So,
Excellent. And I also have Ashley McCallum, who is a Facebook user, and that's about all I know. And I know a listener of Truth News Australia. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Hewitt. It's good to be here.
Yeah, look, it is great to have you both on, and you've both been quite, forthright in expressing your opinion and consternation at this article. I'll just go to Carolyn first. Can you just give a quick synopsis of where you stand on this, and maybe if you could address the points I made, and then I'll just quickly go to Ashley, and then we'll have a bit more discussion.
Thought is, I wonder how Stephen Hawking feels about his statement about killing disabled people. These kind of statements are put into the public arena, I believe, basically to shock people to start off with, but it also is to change our the way we view and to make us question our traditional morals. I actually wrote down some of the statements from their actual study, or from I wouldn't call it study, I suppose, from their paper.
Indeed.
One of the quotes that they've got here, "Merely being human is not in itself a reason for ascribing someone a right to life." Well, I would have thought that was self-evident. I mean, all of the great philosophers that have been in the past attribute the right to life and the preservation of life as being part of natural law.
Indeed. Can I just ask, Carolyn, where you stand on the larger question of abortion? And do you see that the fetus has a equal right to life and should be considered a person right from the moment of conception? Or do you?
Yeah,
do you...
I do. Okay. I do. I'm a Christian, so I believe that. And I actually had a baby out of wedlock, so that that was something that I might have considered normally.
Right.
However, I also consider that because it is the law, I would question whether it would be right to sort of say to somebody that you're not allowed that as well. So as far as for me personally, only speaking from my perspective, personally I would not have an abortion. However, I do know people that have had abortions.
Excellent.
So, but this is not what this article is, though. The problem here is that they're saying that after the baby is born.
Well, the article is drawing on a philosophical argument about
that's
what
right.
is a person and what is a non-person. And this
that's
is
right.
this is a an argument which has had other people build it up philosophically, like Peter Singer, to the point where it is actually quite widely accepted, that the definition of a non-person, the definition of a person and the distinction between a person and a non-person. Now, I'll just quickly go to Ashley. Ashley, can you just give your immediate take on what the article is saying, and if you can possibly comment on my observations as well, that'd be great.
Well, my immediate reaction to reading the abstract, which was what was first released,
yes.
was one of shock, obviously, and I felt that the article, even just the title of the article, Afterbirth Abortion, Why Should the Baby Live? I felt that was worded in a way to be, you know, purposely provocative.
Yes.
And to instantly grab the reader's attention and to conjure up a number of emotions. And I mean, in the introduction, the word kill or killing is mentioned several times. And based on my observations, it's not a common word used amongst proponents of abortion. And so that led me to be a little sceptical of the article, that it was actually a pro-abortion article. And I guess one would naturally hope that, you know, a fellow human being wouldn't actually genuinely advocate the killing of babies. But in light of Singer and other so-called philosophers on the subject, as you've just mentioned, this article does actually dovetail in with what is becoming popular thought, and that is quite troublesome. I'm actually a nurse myself, and so naturally, like during my nursing training, we're exposed to all of these arguments, and we're encouraged to be quite tolerant of these views, and in the spirit of diversity, you could say.
Right.
So this is definitely nothing new, and these people do think like this.
Absolutely. Now, I just want to give you my perspective on it. I think that this argument is allowed through because it actually there's a kind of a crack in the door that's created. Initially, of course, by the fact that abortion is legal. So that has set a precedent now whereby it is then assumed that we're all happy with that, which, of course, a lot of people are not happy with that. But that is one of the sort of the foundations of the argument that they then proceed with, because they keep referring back to it. You know, it's no worse than killing a fetus, right? So and we're all happy with killing fetuses, so we're all happy with killing babies.
That's the thing I think that is really eminent in this article, is it's incremental.
Indeed.
It's the way that they do. It's the way that they do it. If you look at Hitler, okay. First of all, what he did was his argument was basically for the he had a policy that first of all for defectives, and then extended it to delinquents, and in the end he basically extended it to nonconformists.
Exactly. Now, look, we're just going to break and we'll be back with one more segment. Thanks, guys. Can you hang on?
Sure.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, "Is that why we got the page to not come in today?" End quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning, and if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Murrah Building? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
At hempusa.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, microplant powder. Our microplant powder is rich in silica and probiotics to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Microplant powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. Today we're talking about the killing of infants and the legal justifications for that as put forward by the Bioethics magazine, the British Medical Journal, and I have two guests on the line today who are expressing their feelings and their concern and their outrage. And of course, it's pretty significant because both of the authors of this article were Australian and they're academics at Australian universities. This article has had some attention from the US, and I noticed it was mentioned recently on the Alex Jones show. They certainly picked it up over there at Prison Planet. And I find it rather unfortunate that, our country is coming across in this way as being kind of the sewer of human civilization and morality, with stuff like this having such prominence and people who are promoting it having such prominence. And so I felt it was really important to do this show. And I feel it's important for my own sense of dignity to do this show so that people know that we in Australia are not of this mentality. This is a mentality of an element within our society which is quite predominant and has a lot of power, but it is by no means a representation of who the people of this country are. Now, I have actually found that quote I was digging for before. "The newborn and the fetus are morally equivalent." Now, this is from the article. "The moral status of an infant is equivalent to that of a fetus in the sense that both lack those properties that justify the attribution of a right to life to an individual. Both a fetus and a newborn are human beings and potential persons, but neither is a person in the sense of a subject of a moral right to life." Now, this is the crux of it. This is what justifies their action. They're saying that these are non-persons. But this idea that certain people are non-persons, it should sound familiar to you because it's the same type of argument that has been used by fascist societies, by communist societies, by totalitarian regimes throughout history to eliminate people. As soon as you start saying certain people are non-persons, that is pure totalitarianism.
That's exactly right. Look, the other thing that, I found really quite amusing in a way. Like, I mean, maybe it's just my sense of humour, but when they said that they have a lack of sense of their own life and aspiration, well, have you ever tried to not feed a baby? Like, when that baby has certainly a sense of itself, you know, basically enough to scream the place down. When it's hungry, you know that it's hungry, and you cannot ignore it. And they call it a potential person. Well, I would argue that Minerva and however you pronounce that name,
yeah.
Gugliani, is
it's
it?
A mouthful.
Gugliani, or
yeah, I give up.
People. Whatever his name is, I can't pronounce it, but anyway,
sure.
I would argue that they are potential people. If you look at the great philosophers, like, for example, Aristotle and Aquinas and people like that, they equated the preservation of human life with natural law. Now, if their arguments, including Peter Singer, is still around in 2,000 years' time, like the great philosophers that have been, then maybe I might consider that something that they might have said might be worthwhile. However, I doubt that they'll be around for that long, because the thing is that every society, when it fails to look after the weakest in it, the society goes into decay. Every single society throughout history. That's why the great philosophers knew this. The preservation of life was inherent. You know, I just think that it's really, you know, you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, it's utilitarianism.
The preservation of life is the key to a society's success and longevity.
But utilitarianism was the essence of the eugenics. So
yeah,
this is really no different to the eugenics position. It's just worded a bit differently, but it is basically utilitarianism. It's saying certain people are useful, others aren't. The ones that aren't useful, and if you go into the detail of the arguments, and you also compare it with what Peter Singer has written, they actually argue that some people, for example, Down syndrome children. See, Down syndrome children can be very happy. In fact, a large proportion of Down syndrome children are happy. And so it is not some curse. It is not as if being born with Down syndrome is a terrible curse. But these people and Singer argue that you should still kill a Down syndrome child because it's a burden on the family. Now, this is the greater good argument. And, of course, the greater good argument is the worst, the most dangerous, malicious, vicious, poisonous argument that has ever been used to exterminate people, because it says we have to kill these people for the greater good of humanity.
Well, what comes into this article several times is the word economics or economical.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, given that we're living in a more and more centrally planned world, and where health is essentially the product of the central planners, these sorts of arguments are going to become more and more common. And in the future, as governments find it harder and harder to support these massive public health systems, I'd expect to see a lot more of this, because we talk about this in health every day.
Of course.
How are we going to pay for these things? And of course, the weakest link in the chain is the unborn child, or the child in this case who is one day old who does have Down syndrome, and they can't defend themselves. And with the argument presented in this article, you could imagine that being justified in 10 years' time. But the very first line that the world got to read of this article, which is the first line of the abstract, is this: abortion is largely accepted even for reasons that do not have anything to do with the fetus's health. And so there's that precedent you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
And at present, they'll typically abort a fetus up until the age of about 22 weeks. And given that a full-term pregnancy is 40 weeks, and that is normally because a doctor adds 2 weeks onto that, so we're really talking 38 weeks on average. 22 weeks is actually quite advanced. It looks like a baby. It looks like a human, and it is very human.
Babies can survive. And they can survive being born. Like, it's rare, but they occasionally do survive at that age. At that age when they're born, don't they?
And when we're thinking of a fetus, I mean, a fetus is a fetus right up until the actual delivery.
Yes.
Of the baby. And if a baby is delivered by cesarean, then the separation between the fetal stage and the neonate stage could technically be, the five minutes it takes to actually cut through the womb. So again, I mean, they have, outlined that there is that moral precedent to abort a fetus. So what's the difference between the fetus 5 minutes prior to that cesarean and the fetus after that cesarean? And this is the whole slippery slope argument. And I mean, you can see it being clearly played out here.
Absolutely, and it gets to quite a ridiculous level. I mean, towards the end of the article, they actually propose an idea whereby they're trying to justify why taking children for adoption who are not wanted might be less preferable than killing them. And they use this rather bizarre argument that when a mother has a child, that the mother can be quite traumatized by the child being taken away and going to another family. And they say that we must consider the trauma to the mother of having the child go out for adoption and consider that it might be better to kill the child if that would make the mother happier. I mean, if you just summarize it and just boil it all down, they're basically saying that it's better to just kill the child if it's not wanted than put it out for adoption, because by putting it out for adoption, the mother will be quite disturbed and will wonder how that child is for the rest of its life.
And in your Facebook post on your Truth News Australia page, you mentioned the Hippocratic Oath.
Indeed.
And how these researchers or philosophers or whatever they think they are aren't bound by that because they're not doctors. But even a doctor making such a decision, he will apply the Hippocratic Oath to that mother and he will consider the mother's psychological health first, because it is the mother who is the patient and the baby is not.
Right.
That's right, yeah.
And that, of course,
I just think going back to the argument of productivity, if you actually look at that argument, like if they're not being productive to society, I would actually argue that Minerva and Gubelini are a greater threat to society than caring for a disabled child, because if these ideas gain traction in a society where our fertility is diminishing, they are perpetrating the ideas, the very factors that make societies collapse. And because they're doing it incrementally, it seems that it's kind of like a wearing down syndrome. So on that, I would argue that they are more dangerous than looking after disabled children.
You could certainly say that, and you could certainly say that they are, in a sense, they're on a journey towards self-discovery, but you could argue that they're non-persons in the sense
that's exactly what I'm saying. They are non-persons to have this. If they are so disconnected, can you imagine if they actually have children themselves? I didn't Google them to find out if they're parents.
Yeah.
But like, they are so if they're so disconnected on this level, imagine what their relationships are, or their lack of, are like with their own children. You know, it was Mahatma Gandhi who said, a nation's greatness is measured by how it treats its weakest members. If they are perpetrating this kind of ideology at their level, then good grief, what kind of relationships do they have?
Yes, and of course, you know, it's not just the fact that they exist and that they wrote the article. You could say that there are people out there who are nutters who will write articles like this. But the second thing we have to face is that these articles have been propped up by prestigious institutions and given a huge audience, and then given a vast audience by being put on the front page of one of the top newspapers in the country. And you've got to ask the question, why?
And this is a very influential publication. I mean, this publication doesn't go to the local news agent. It's read by ethicists who work in hospitals all around the world, and they form their opinions based upon, you know, such publications. So this article does have a tremendous reach with the people that matter.
And, of course, the arguments put forward here dovetail very nicely with the arguments of eco-terrorists like Derek Jensen, who actually argue that humanity should be exterminated because, and this also meshes with Peter Singer's arguments, because animals need to have equal rights with humans, and there are too many humans on the planet, therefore we need to start killing humans. And of course, there is a connection right through here, through the bioethics, through the utilitarianism, the eugenics, and the pseudo-environmental movements and animal rights movements. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time. Thanks, guys. Any final words?
God help us.
Yeah. Well, I believe that there is help there, and I'm gonna start praying. Thanks very much for coming on today.
Thanks a lot, Edward, for having us.
Thanks. And that's it from Truth News Radio Australia. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week. See you then.
The Bible. Bible remains the most popular book in the world. Yet countless readers are frustrated because they struggle to understand it. Some new translations try to help by simplifying the text, but in the process can compromise the profound meaning of the Scripture. Enter the Recovery Version. First, this new translation is extremely faithful and accurate, but the real story is the more than 9,000 explanatory footnotes. Difficult and profound passages are opened up in a marvelous way, providing an entrance into the riches of the Word beyond which you've ever experienced before. Bibles for America would like to give you a free recovery version simply for the asking. This comprehensive yet compact study Bible is yours just by calling us toll-free at 1-888-551-0102 or by ordering online at freestudybible.com. That's freestudybible.com.